Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the Live Issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Hey there, bastards and wenches, and welcome to another edition of One-on-One. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo. This is our annual PAX East special, and as you can probably tell, my voice is almost shot to shit. Had such a great time, but I'll be talking a little bit more about that on our next episode of No Borders, No Race. So, we've got 13, that's right, a baker's dozen of interviews for you to check out in this episode. We're going to be talking with some people from Devolver Digital, from Gung Ho Online Entertainment, The Red Barrels, Isbrid Games, Nerds Clothing, so many people we chatted with, and I can't wait for you to listen. So let's get this episode underway with this year's PAX East 2016 One-on-One Special. Folks, what an experience I just had over at the Freema Originals booth. I'm here with Vincent Martell playing Fated, which is going to be released sometime next week for Oculus, correct?
Yeah, it's going to be released on Oculus Rift and HTC Vive next Thursday, April 28th, and PlayStation VR in October.
So what I experienced in the game is like the first part of it, correct?
It's more in the middle of the story, so that's Act 2 out of 5 Act. The entire experience is an hour and a half to 2 hours, probably closer to an hour and a half. So that was in the middle.
All right. Would you say it's more like an interactive film than it is a video game?
Yeah, it's an interactive experience. That scene you've just experienced was action-packed. We have more slower-paced scenes where you interact with your surroundings, you interact with the people, your friends. So we really wanted to build interaction with your family in this game.
Right. So for my listeners, because there will be an article about this, but just in case if they didn't get a chance to read it yet, the experience that I had with this game was I started out on my horse-drawn carriage, following the rest of my family, having a nice conversation with my wife and daughter, which, by the way, looking down and looking all around, just seeing like my virtual hands there, it's quite the surreal thing. I've experienced VR these past couple years. I still don't get over that fact yet. But then all of a sudden, mass chaos comes. Giants are roaming around. Boulders are falling down. And you're just trying to survive throughout the entire thing. And what I loved about this setup, what you have for PAX, is that you had you had wind, you had vibrating seats. You gave us the experience of us feeling like we're actually there.
Yeah, and that's what's cool about VR, is like being there. Having your body, not a lot of people are doing this, and it brings so much to the game. It feels like you're part of this world, and when you go and talk to somebody, it's a lot easier for you to accept that they notice your presence if you have a body. So it was really important for us to put you in the game.
That's nice. And one question I have is, because during the playthrough, my daughter, my character's daughter,
yep,
is talking about how I've lost my voice.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about
what occurs that makes him mute.
Sure, it's happening at the beginning of the story, so there's no spoiler. You start the game, you're actually dead, there's a Valkyrie that comes and talks to you and say, I'll bring you back to life if you give me your voice, because you never, you can never reveal me. The gods would punish us both. So you give your voice for your life, and she has a quest for you. I won't reveal the quest, but yeah.
Right, so you want, we'll let our, hopefully, listeners and readers find out what this quest is.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your developing company.
We're called Frima. I'm part of the IP department, but we are a big studio in Quebec City in Canada. We're 400 people. We've done work for hire, concept art for all the big studios. I'm part of the IP department, so I create our own games. So we're kind of an indie studio within a bigger studio. So yeah.
That's nice. So what I like too, because you're getting the reaction of people while they're playing a game, myself included. Who knows if I'm going to show up in it or not. So what has the initial reaction been from all these players that you've had here at PAX East so far?
Pretty awesome. Well, the experience is really immersive and it's really intense. So people are reacting really strongly to it. We'll have a video next week showing some reaction. But I'm always surprised about the fact that people seem to care about the characters in the cart. And I've saw someone try to grab in real life the little girl when she was falling. And this is really great for me, because this is the type of connection that we try to build. I have a daughter myself. I'm a father, so that relation with your child was really important to come through in this game. So yes. And it seems to be working. We'll know if it's really working when the game releases, but I'm really happy with the results so far.
Yes, so far so good. I'm really liking what you've been bringing to the table with Faded. The game is coming out next week, as you said, HTC and on Oculus. Will it be a launch title for PlayStation VR?
Yeah, it will be.
Thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. And where can more people find information on Faded?
We have the site fadedgame.com, and we also have a developer blog at fadedblog.com.
Excellent. And good luck in the rest of PAX East, and I hope you get as many different reactions from this throughout the entire weekend.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
We are coming to you from the Devolver Digital booth. We are playing the game straight. I'm here with Tom Glunt, who is one of the guys who helped create this game. Welcome to One-on-One. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
So tell us a little bit about Pixel Titans, first off.
Oh, Pixel Titans is my friend Steve and we started making Strafe as our first product. We were both in the film industry. We were making videos together, and I found out he was this amazing programmer, so we took our love for classic shooters and we decided to make one of ourselves.
And thus, you created Strafe.
Yep.
You know, when I'm playing this game, I have this sort of little bit of a little nostalgia of playing stuff like Wolfenstein and Doom, Quake, all those. So, did those help in the creation of Strafe? Going back to play those games, going, all right, here's what worked then, here's what worked now, and so forth?
Absolutely, 100%. We wouldn't have Strafe without Quake, without early id. I was playing through Quake and Quake 2 in like early 2014, and I remembered how good they felt. I hadn't played in a long time, but I was amazed that I still remembered where everything was, and in some weird way. And at the time, I was also playing a lot of Spelunky, and I was hungry for a shooter that had a really good gameplay, like Quake, you know, like those classic early primitive 3D ones. And yet I wanted it to be fresh each time. I wanted, you know, enemy placement to change, monster clauses to change. And it got to the point where no one was making it, so we said, we'll just make it ourselves.
Can you tell our listeners about the story behind the Strafe? What's going to be happening within this title?
Well, we often jokingly say that, you know, there's this famous Carmack quote from the 90s that said, storyline in games is like storyline in porno. It's expected to be there, but it's not important. But, you know, clearly that's changed. Well,
yeah.
We have a premise. We have, in the tutorial, we have a training video that sets up the story, which is, you play as a scout ship for a huge scrapping vessel, and the core system has been picked clean by all the other scrappers in the galaxy, so you're heading to the fringe, to the edge, where everything's floating out to, trying to just make it rich with this huge ship. You come back from a scouting mission, and they're gone. Their teleporter's in range, but you can't see them. So you teleport aboard, you bring a gun just in case, and everything went wrong. So now the game is just you trying to get back to your ship so you can make it home, and against all odds. And there's a little more to it, but that's the gist.
Absolutely. And then, you know, looking at the creatures that are in this game, I'm kind of getting a bit of an Island of Dr. Moreau vibe from these little sloth creatures.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say anything about that because that is a part of the story. The enemies, like why you're killing, who you're killing, and that type of thing, it is part of the story. So when we build the game, we try to make sure everything has a reason and it follows a logic based on the story of the world or a set of rules. So.
Very cool. So do you have an expected release date yet for Strafe?
We've announced early 2017. Right. The game's core systems are in. A lot of it's art complete, but we just want to make sure it feels great.
Yeah. Now, one final question I have, because with me, this looks very familiar. I'm looking at this keyboard here.
Yeah.
I believe that was from an IBM PS1. Am I correct?
Yeah. Well, it is a... From that one, I believe, is 93, and we have another one that we bought from 95. So,
because that's exactly the same keyboard I had on my very first computer, so that really helped with the nostalgia vibe of playing this game.
They're lovely.
They are. But Tom, thank you so much for joining me here in One-on-One. Strafe coming 2017 from Devolver Digital. Thank you so much, and best of luck with the rest of PAX East.
Yeah.
We are coming to you from the Sprit Games booth, and I'm talking with David and Daniel from Jumpsuit Entertainment, who've created a very, very beautiful game known as She Remembered Caterpillars. First of all, welcome to One-on-One. How are you both doing?
We're doing pretty good, thanks.
Yeah, it's a really nice convention.
Tell us a little bit about Jumpsuit Entertainment.
Well, we founded the company 2 years ago just to make this game. And with the backing of our publisher.
So tell us about the concept of She Remembered Caterpillars. Like, what's the story behind the game?
The story behind the game is basically about a young girl whose father has Alzheimer's. And maybe Daniel can explain the details.
It's a fungi punk story in the sense of what you're visually presented. And, well, it's a relationship between a young girl and her father, and the father is in a comatose state, and she tries to rescue him from that state. What you're seeing in the game is basically a kind of dreamscape that you are walking through trying to solve puzzles in order to come back to consciousness.
So in a way, it's like you're bringing from one place to another. You're trying to gather all these memories back together so they can wake up.
Yes, but the memories are, they're not presented as collectibles. The story will be presented mostly via text, but it kind of a little gap between the visual and story, so there's some room for you as audience to create images yourself in your head.
Right. Yeah. So what I like about the game, because it's a fun-looking game, but it has a very deep narrative to it. It brings to mind a game that I played many years ago called Isle of Milo on the Xbox 360. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
Yes, I love that game. I've played it with my wife quite a few times, and there's a similarity to it. It's not visually, but in the game feel, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. Because I know I was talking with about this sort of game. It's hard to really describe it in words. It's one of those games where you have to actually see it to understand what's going on with it.
Yeah. That was one of our difficulties. Like, every time I tried to pitch the game, it's like, yeah, it's a color-based puzzle mechanic, but you end up, like, most people end up with a stare. But once you show them a trailer, they're like, ah, yeah, I understand.
How wide of a story is this that you're going to be showcasing in the game?
The story, or which part?
Maybe like a mixture of both, the gameplay and the story mode.
Well, the gameplay, let's say, just in sense of levels, will be around 40 levels. And in the demo here is 8 levels. And for some people, it's already quite difficult, quite tough. And so it will get even tougher. It's not going to be an easy game. And The story will be, I can't really say in sense of volume, but let's say the experience should be around somewhere 2.5-3 hours.
That's not too bad. And you're right, it does get challenging early on as you go along, like trying to switch between the two characters, because you start out with both red and blue, but then you can also combine the two to make purple, because there's sometimes the purple caterpillars you gotta drive, go around. But then sometimes you gotta figure out, okay, how do you get this one over to this one without having to get rid of the other one? It is very mind-boggling, but I like that sort of gameplay because it makes your brain work for victory.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it like as non-repetitive as possible, so the player has to use his brain every time again when a new level starts.
Yeah, and it's good that you do something like that, because you don't want it just to be straightforward just from start to finish. You want there to be the hills, kind of like the, because I know we're here in the Boston area, we just had the Boston Marathon. There's that part of the Boston Marathon called the Heartbreak Hill, because it goes all the way up there. And that's where a lot of people give up on, but those who don't give up are rewarded at the end.
Oh yeah, sure. I really hope the game is rewarding for those who really try to solve it. And I really hope too that you can't solve most of the levels by just trying different ways and you stumble across the solution.
So, do you have an expected release date yet for She Remember Caterpillars?
Later this year. Can't really say more precise than that.
It's not too bad. Because, you know, there are a lot of games that are coming out, but this is a game that I feel like a lot of people are going to look at, and when they first experience it, they're going to realize not just the power of the story, but also the power of a good brain teaser that this game has.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we want.
Yeah. So, David, Daniel, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. She Remember Caterpillars, coming out from Yuzvich Games and Jumpsuit Entertainment. I almost forgot.
You did it. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I was of poor folk, but my mother had a rabbit fur coat. Then a girl of less character pushed her down the L.A. River and over that rabbit fur coat. She put a knife to her throat. And
all right, folks, ladies and gentlemen, I think I found the game of the show. Stage presence, please introduce yourself, man.
Hello, my name is Mike Rose. I'm from Tiny Build, and I am the producer on Stage Presence.
First of all, this is one of the most fun experiences I've had at all of PAX East. Please tell me how you came up with this idea.
So this is from the mind of a guy called John Dadley, who lives in Manchester. I'm from Manchester as well, so the two of us are kind of getting it on with this thing. So the thing with VR games, right, at least for me, is that whenever you play a VR game where there's a lot of movement, you start to feel dizzy and it gets all kinds of horrible. With this game, you're stood on a stage, you have a microphone, and you have to keep a crowd happy for 45 seconds without them throwing shit at you. So essentially, the idea is that you're on stage at a festival, and everything on stage goes horribly wrong, and the only thing working is your microphone, and you need to take that microphone and do anything into it to keep the crowd happy. You can sing, you can rap. I've seen people at PAX insulting the crowd. I've seen them jumping all over the place. You need to do something, because if you don't do something, the crowd will turn on you. They will throw bottles of piss at you. They'll shine laser pointers in your face. They'll throw glow sticks at you, and they'll generally boo you off the stage. So this is the base mode of the game. There's going to be loads of modes. There's a multiplayer where people can take control of people in the crowd and throw bottles of piss. If you stream it on Twitch, you can type things into the chat to take over people in the crowd. There's so much, and I'm so excited for it. It's going to be incredible. The thing with this game is this is like my puppy, you know? Like, all the other games here I love, but this one is my game, right? This is the one, because I go to a lot of gigs, right? So when I saw this game, when I saw John Wick on this game, I wanted to immediately be involved with this game. I needed to be involved with this game, because this is my life. So the two of us have basically, since we started working together, we've filled up Google Docs, filled with ideas that are going to be going into the final game. And I'm really excited to be getting it out to people.
So my question is, you said the multiplayer aspect, so will there be a perspective from the other players of the crowd trying to toss things at them?
Yes, there will be indeed. We actually, we put a trailer out for the game yesterday, which I'll be able to link to you, but you'll be able to see a sneak peek preview of that, of someone in the crowd actually lobbing a bottle at the person. So yeah, the multiplayer is really exciting for us because the whole point of the game is that it's going to be very cheap. We don't know what price yet, but we're talking literally like $3 to $5.
That sounds bad.
Yeah, so the idea is that it's going to be very much one of those games where when your friend is like, I'm playing this, do you want to just throw some bottles of piss at me? It'll cost you $3. You're like, yeah, I'll pay $3 to throw piss at you. That sounds like a good idea, yeah.
This is an awesome concept. And for it to be that price, it's practically steal, because this is the type of game that I want to see being played at tons of parties.
Yeah.
This is a game that I think tons of people are going to have fun with.
Yes.
Now, my question is, I see you have it hooked up for PC stuff. What sort of platformers are you planning to have in this game?
So, at the moment, we're planning Steam, and that's going to be, Steam VR, it's going to be Oculus, it's going to be Vive. We're hoping for PlayStation VR as well. We just announced the game yesterday, right? So we're going to be having talks with PlayStation at this point, once they see the reaction to this game. Generally, as many platforms as possible is the answer.
Well, dude, let me tell you something. Like I said, this has been like the most fun game I've played at PAX East so far. Stage presence coming soon to PC, to all VR, hopefully to PlayStation VR. Yeah. Please, Sony, check out this game. Give them the green light, because it is going to be one of the most fun party games anyone's going to experience, probably in the forever of forever.
Cheers, man.
When it's time to party, we will party hard.
Coming to you from the Gung Ho Online booth, I am here with Ray Bautista showing me off Super Senso, a really incredibly fun mobile game that is coming soon later this year. Welcome to One-on-One. How are you doing today?
I am doing awesome. Thanks for having me.
So, this is what's so cool about Super Senso. I know we haven't talked yet about the game itself, but you managed to grab somebody from Nintendo to help out with this game.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Super Senso is a turn-based strategy game. We're a huge fan of a game called Advance Wars, which came out on Nintendo years ago.
Yeah.
It really kind of defined the genre. And not only were we fans of Advance Wars as it relates to the gameplay, but really that golden age of Nintendo with the aesthetic and the art style. So much so, we actually went out and stole somebody from Nintendo that actually was a character artist. His name is John, and he actually is the art director for the game. So you could really see it translate on the skills, not only John, but the entire team, right? So I myself used to work at PlayStation. Our design director was from Riot. Our founder is actually was at Square Enix, last CCP Games, left to start Turbo. So pedigree of the company is awesome.
That is really, really cool. So the premise of the game, Super Senso, inspired by Advance Wars, it's, person versus person, war against war. You got soldiers, you got zombies, you've got catcopters, you've got giant mechas. What don't you have in this game?
I mean, that's it, right? Like, essentially, we're really the proverbial kids in the candy store, right? Like, we're all gamers ourselves. We were fortunate enough to make a living in this industry, and we didn't have the opportunity to make our own game, and we were like, what do we want to see, right? We're like, well, we'd love not only an awesome turn-based game, but we'd love if I could control a big mech. I'd love if I could control a zombie. I'd love if I could have that zombie fight a house cat with a jetpack. So when you say what we don't have, I mean, the sky's the limit. We want to get the community involved. So we released in public beta in December, and we've really just been soliciting feedback, right? The community's like, hey, give us more cats, give us more zombies, give us more mechas. We'll do that, right?
So for our listeners here, tell us about the premise. Like, what do you do in this game?
Yep. So you kind of touched on it. inspired by Advance Wars. The game is a turn-based strategy game. For those of your fans that don't know what Advance Wars is, because it's an older title, a lot of the more sexier type of games that have come out recently, like XCOM, Final Fantasy Tactics, those type of games, is really similar to what we're doing with Super Sento. But at a high level, it would essentially be like speed chess, right? So the matches take place on a gridded battlefield. Our battlefields just, again, happen to be beautiful and in 3D. And instead of having like pawns on a chessboard, you essentially have control of different units that have different movement and attack attributes.
So tell us a little bit about like the kind of units and how you're going to... Are there ways to upgrade them as you progress through the game?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're showing off here at PAX is the core game mechanic, right? So you kind of alluded to it. What we ultimately want to do is have a smash-up army that you can control. Similar to when you were a kid and you had like your G.I. Joes and your Transformers, you'd be playing... destroying the heck out of them when you're in the sandbox, right? We want to recreate that same feeling. So on top of all of the units and all of the mechs and all the good stuff that you have, we are that's what we're showing here at PAX. But the final experience will have like a single player mode so you can practice and get good at the game, but you'll also have a progression where you can upgrade your units, right? So you'll be able to make them stronger, you'll be able to make them attack stronger, you'll be able to give them better movement, and you'll be able to unlock cooler sensos, cooler units like zombies and T-Rexes and all that good stuff.
And on top of that, most of the game is going to be online, so you're going to be able to play player versus player on the thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the core, right? Well, we'll have a single player campaign. I'm a huge egotistical gamer, so I like to practice until I know what I'm doing before I play somebody.
I'm the same way.
Yeah, yeah. So the goal is, once you have that training, we want you going in and playing against somebody else, right? The PvP synchronous combat is what we're all about. We're designing this specifically for the competitive core gamer. It just happens to be on mobile and tablet.
That is super awesome. Now for our listeners, my final question is, why should they jump into Super Sento?
Well, if you're a fan of turn-based strategy, essentially what we're trying to do at Turbo Studios is really blow this genre up, right? We don't think that anybody has done it justice on the mobile and tablet platforms, and we think that these platforms are prime for that type of gameplay. So, guys, please check it out. If you're fans of turn-based strategy, if you're fans of Nintendo, that type of quality, that type of graphics, and if you really want to see something different, and if you're a competitive player that's looking for PvP synchronous play on your mobile, tablet device that's free to play, give us a shot.
Ray, thank you so much for joining me here on One on One. Super Sento coming later this year on iOS and Android. Trust me, jump onto the beta if you can sign up for it right now. It is super fun.
SuperSento.com.
Masters and wenches, this isn't just an interview, this is a motherfucking high school reunion. I'm joined by my good buddy here, Gregory Nunez, and his pals over at Nobody Ever Respects Dorks Society, some kick-ass, badass clothing. Welcome to 101. How are you guys doing today?
Fantastic, man. Thank you for that introduction. Now I feel like I need to live up to that.
but please let our other buddies here introduce themselves.
What's up, man? My name's Eric Medina, owner of Nerds Clothing, and I got over here my buddy... Mark, also, like, cool friend. High school, grade school, actually.
So tell us, what is Nerds?
Nerds is basically an idea that I had, just how I was perceived growing up, and I wanted to take that concept and mix it with something else I love, which is fashion. So I mixed the two together, and that was it, an overnight idea, and this is what it is now. We're over here at PAX, and working with some great people behind us, too. We got Megaran behind us, and it's just great.
Because I love this concept. It's about being proud of being a geek while looking gangster at the same time.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, everybody supports it. I mean, whether you're a full-blown geek or you're a gangster as shit, you know, you can still wear a shirt and still look good in it and still represent your true inner nerd. So.
Yeah, we even got stuff. If you're a rage quitter, we support you too. We even got a couple clothes for rage quitters, so be proud of that. Be proud of throwing the controller down when you get spanked in Street Fighter. That's okay.
Street Fighter, what about someone like Enter the Gungeon or motherfucking Dark Souls?
Yeah, that's true. Dark Souls. That's true rage right there. I can't.
We don't want people rolling all over the floor for Dark Souls.
So, I know this is your company, but what are some of your absolute favorites from your lineup?
Oh, man, there's so many. I mean, a lot of them is, I want to say, is kind of a piece of me and a piece of my childhood that I put together. I mean, I would have to say the logo itself. I created a character. I'm a huge fan of the 1930s old school cartoons. And,
like the Max Fletcher Popeye cartoons.
Popeye, Betty Boop, Bosco, old school Steamboat Mickey type stuff. And, you know, I made my own character, and it just took off from there. So I think I hold that the most close to me because it's basically me in cartoon form.
All right. Because I was going to ask, like, what sort of story is there behind this character?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I love cartoons. I'm a huge cartoon head. I tried to pursue it in college. I actually dropped out of college, and it was art school. And then, I mean, I just said, let's try to make something that would represent the company, but still at the same time, it people think it's dope, you know, and they can relate to it. So, yeah.
You got some great hats. You got some great jackets. You got T-shirts. I think you got a backpack. Yes, you got backpacks right over there.
Man. Definitely want to do, hopefully, pants, a lot more jackets. Hopefully we'll start bringing in some licensing from Capcom. We got socks. We really want to work with like Nintendo and Capcom and everything, and try to get their characters on our clothing line and see there's more to it than just con goers and everything. There's actually people who really like the street culture and everything, and they'll support it if it's done correctly.
Absolutely, man. We got plenty of gear here. We got, you know, we don't stop at just shirts. We got jackets. We got hats. We're gonna do pants. Track suits are coming in. We're gonna embody the whole brand. It's not gonna be just something that you just wear when you're going to a con, but it's an everyday experience when you have our brand on. So this is just gonna be a full life, full body experience.
So for more information, where can people find out about Nerds?
They can go to www.nerdsclothing.com. We also have an Instagram account.
The Instagram is nerds_clothing. And then a Twitter account is nerdsclothingco. And you can find us on all, you know, every social media there is out there, basically. All the cool ones.
And if you ever have any questions, concerns, also I have a Twitter at Nerds Nunez. That's NUNEZ. It's a new account, so don't judge me off of no followers. We actually just opened it up for PAX, so we're going to be putting up discount codes. We're going to be putting up all sorts of stuff on that Twitter page.
Awesome. And folks, please be sure to check out Nobody Ever Spurks Dork Society. Guys, thank you again for joining me here on One-on-One, and best of luck on the rest of PAX East.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
All right, thanks, Ev.
Thank you very much.
Sarasota, Florida, second generation. Talent with the charisma to captivate a nation. The innovation, the voice of a generation. Accept no imitation, the best in the federation. This is the story of a classic who started off in baseball and even got drafted. Moved into wrestling and he smashed it. Ole Anderson said he wrestled like a savage. Birth of the madness. Came up in 85, took a stale program and always made it live.
We're coming to you at the Steel Series booth, where Alex is showing off one of the games that he's worked on, Crossout. Welcome to One-on-One. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thanks.
Tell us a little bit about Crossout, and how different is it compared to other player versus player games out there?
Okay, so Crossout is a game made by Gaijin Entertainment, the creators of War Thunder, and also by Targum Studio, who made Star Conflict, and both games are published by Gaijin Entertainment. And Crossout is a new title. It is in closed beta stage right now. And the main thing about Crossout, it's the car building aspect of this game, because Crossout is a post-apocalyptic car combat game. Think of it like Mad Max meets like Minecraft or something.
Maybe even a little bit of Twisted Metal in there too.
And Twisted Metal or Carmageddon, like any car combat game out there. And main feature is that no car in Crossout is the same. So unlike War Thunder, for example, when you have like historical like tanks and planes, in Crossout you build your own car yourself. So there are hundreds of different parts like frames, wheels, treads, engines, all kinds of weapons, and you can combine them in very advanced editor mode to create the, you know, killing machine of your dreams. And then you go to battles against other players. Yeah. And every vehicle in Crossout is unique because it was created by someone. We didn't create any cars for the game. always done by players.
Right, so what it is like you create the parts, but it's up to the players to piece it all together.
Yeah, sure. So, and by going to battles against other players, you earn some loot, some new parts, and then you can use like advanced crafting system to create even more powerful, more rare parts, and then you can use the market inside the game, so we have a real economy going there.
Yeah.
So you can sell your parts, you can purchase the parts from other players, so there is a real like supply and demand, and there are like ups and downs on the markets. One day it is flooded with machine guns, you know, the other day they are very rare and stuff like this.
Very cool. So tell us a little bit about the whole battle system on there. What could people expect when they get onto the battlefield when it's car versus car?
So the battles in the closed beta right now are 8 versus 8. So it's a team deathmatch basically. There are some objectives like capture and hold some point on the map. But usually the battles are done when all enemies are destroyed. And battles in Crossout are very quick. It's like 3 minutes most. And the cool thing about damage system of Crossout, you can destroy any part of enemy vehicle. So you can like destroy enemy wheels and he won't be able to move. Or you can destroy his guns and he won't be able to fire back at you. So, you know, it's not just like draining the hit points. You have to think, you know, what part of enemy vehicles you have to destroy first.
Right, and it's not just, you know, it's not just those types of weapons too. You've also got like saws, chainsaws, you've also got different kinds of weapons you can use that you can add onto your car to even just ram into other people and use that power and to immobilize them.
Of course, we have like dozens of different weapons, machine guns, cannons, shotguns, rocket launchers, and also there is a huge arsenal of melee weapons like chainsaws, buzzsaws, power drills, just, you know, blades attached or spikes attached to your car. And it is great because, like I said, you can destroy guns on enemy cars and they can destroy your guns as well. But at least you will be able to use your chainsaw, for example, to go into melee and kill someone. So, and there are also like stealth generators that turn you invisible for a short time. There are like flying drones that you can launch and they will attack the enemies automatically. So, and when you're building your car, you have to think about balance, because each car has a certain limits of energy consumption and so on. So you can't just install like 10 cannons on your car.
Right, because then it'll be too heavy and it won't, and it'll even barely move.
And you won't have enough energy.
That too.
So you have to think, like, should I put like a cannon and some machine gun, or should I use like 4 machine guns at once? Because, you know, the energy consumption will be the same, but it will be 2 different play styles, opposite play styles, I would say.
Really cool. So, with the community as it is right now, I know you guys just started with the closed beta. Has there been a vehicle that has stood out for you so far?
Well, our players create all kinds of crazy designs, and you can actually check them out inside the game. There is the special exhibition page, so you can check other people. You can like their designs if you want. And the most crazy one I saw so far was this. Thin, so it had this huge counterweight on one side and rocket boosters on the other side. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you try to drive it, it flips over, but then you use these boosters and basically it's like Challenger launch.
Really?
Yes, it's so crazy.
That sounds really cool. So, you're on closed beta right now.
Yep.
Do you have an official day of when you feel like the game will be fully launched?
Well, we are thinking about end of this year, but you know it will depend on how closed beta will go, because we still need to balance things out, to check all of the bugs and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. So, but maybe end of this year.
I'll cross my fingers for you. So, Alex, thank you so much for joining me here on 101. Where can more people find out more on Crossout?
You can visit the official website at crossout.net.
Very cool. Alex, thank you again, and best of luck with you for the rest of PAX East.
You're welcome.
to you from the Zoic booth with Michael Forslin, who is one of the main guys behind Zombie Vikings, from the creators of Stick It to the Man, one of my favorite games that have come out in recent memory. Welcome to 101. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very good. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. First of all, I just got out of playing Zombie Vikings. Super fun. Where did the idea for this game first come out?
There was a game called Castle Crashers that came out a couple of years ago, and Klaus, who's like the creative director over at Zoink Games, he really liked that game and he got really inspired by it, and he wanted to create something like in the style of Castle Crashers, but we wanted to create more of a story surrounding the characters you control in the game. So we thought of Zombie Vikings and we created four unique characters, and in the game you fully explore all the characters and their personality and what made them become Zombie Vikings and not just Vikings.
Very cool. So can you tell me a little bit about the story behind why the Zombie Vikings have been brought back from the dead and on this specific sort of mission?
Yeah, the main story of the game is that it's based on the Nordic mythology. Since we're Swedish, we are allowed to make fun of the Nordic mythology. And there's this old knowing god called Odin. He has one eye. And that eye gets stolen by the main villain in the Nordic mythology, which is called Loki. And since normally you ask Thor, who's the thunder god, the god that most people know about, and he asked him, but he's busy partying and doing commercials and, you know, being a douchebag, most likely. Yeah, so instead of asking him, he did ask him, but since he was busy, he decides to resurrect four dead zombies, which were like the greatest Viking warriors at that time. And they were dead, so he resurrects them, and he sends them off to find the eye.
So tell us a little bit about these zombie Vikings. Like, what makes them so powerful? Like, why were these the perfect Vikings to be sent out on this mission?
Yeah, we have four unique characters. It's called Gun. One of them is called Gunborg. She's like this huge Amazon woman, and really huge muscles. And we have a tiny creature called Hedgie, which also have no one really knows what he says. And we have a man squid, which likes part man, part squid, which can fire squid from his stomach. And the last one is like a crow lady. She's called Kaka, and she's part bird and part zombie. And they were just the best of their times, so it made sense to ask them.
Now, those aren't the only characters you can play as, because I see here you've got the Ragnarok edition for PlayStation 4, which features a couple additional characters that are featured in the game. Can you tell us about those ones?
Yeah, in the Ragnarok edition, which is the PS4 physical disc, we included two more characters which aren't included in the other version. They are Frostbjörn, which is like this Norse Viking warrior covered in ice, kind of. Mm-hmm. And we have Raybjörn, which is the character Ray from Stick It to the Man, but in zombie shape.
Very cool. I don't know if you mentioned this character already, but I kind of recognize another person in this game from... Oh my god, I can't believe I'm blanking on it.
Psychonauts.
Yes, from Psychonauts.
Yes, we have Raz Zombie, as we call him, which is Raz from Psychonauts in the game. It's really fun. We get to work with Double Fine, and they allowed us to have Raz Zombie in the game, which is really cool. And he has the best special attack ever, in which he fires bacon that shoots down from the sky.
That's awesome. Yeah, so we've been playing this game for a little bit. I did a couple levels, had a blast. And I know it's out on PS4 and Steam right now, but it's coming on Xbox One pretty soon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's releasing on Xbox One in a couple of weeks, one or two months, hopefully, depending on how well everything goes. But it's pretty much done. We're just adding the last thing that Microsoft needs in order to release the game. So
very cool. So my final question is, since this game is completed with Zoink, what's next on the horizon for Zoink? I don't know if you can reveal it yet, but I want to ask anyway.
Yeah, I can't say anything at the moment, but we are working on exciting new projects, which we're going to talk about pretty soon. Not this summer, but probably after the summer. And they are... You'll love them.
Awesome. Michael, thank you so much for joining here on 101. Zombie Vikings is now on the PS4 and Steam, and coming soon on the Xbox One. Get a couple friends to play along, because it is a blast.
Thank you so much.
Once again, we're at the Devolver Digital booth playing Shadow Warrior 2, and I am with Todd. My God, this game is insane.
Yes, it is, definitely.
How has Shadow Warrior 2 evolved since the first one?
Okay, so pretty much everything evolved. The fighting system, the way we build the levels, the way we create graphics. The company is, I think, twice as big as it was when we were working on Shadow Warrior 1. So, yeah, we have twice the manpower to do it. I would say that the most important change is that right now we don't have a linear gameplay. Right now all the missions are constructed of blocks, yeah, and the blocks are randomized. And it goes even further, so within those blocks there are elements of that are further randomized. So each time when you load into a level, it's practically a new level. So I've been playing this demo for like 3 weeks now, maybe? Yeah, three weeks, I think. I still don't remember all the layouts, and I still get heaps of fun out of it.
What's so insane about the whole thing is that this is their own unique engine to this game.
Yes, it is. Actually, the company was founded by three guys who created Roadhog Engine. Yeah. It was first created for Hard Reset, of course, which was our first game. And later on, we were noticed by Devolver Digital, and they offered us an option to create Shadow Warrior on their, because they were the owners of the IP. Yeah. So this is when we used Roadhog Engine for the second time. Right now it's the third iteration, I would say. And yeah, it's a gorgeous engine. I love the way the game looks. The effects are really,
just the
really
attention
cool
to the detail, even in the background. You can just see like the wind blowing through the trees.
Yeah,
and
like swaying trees. Yeah,
and not to mention the gore factor too of the video game.
Oh yeah,
I was blown away by that whole aspect.
So in the first game we had a cutting system which was basically based on certain points on the model that were cut off. Right now we have a fully procedural cutting system, so you can basically slice and dice as you wish. It's very similar to Afro Samurai, to Metal Gear Revengeance. I would say those games are the best examples of that way of dealing with the enemies. So we have the same, but it's way easier to just pull out.
I think my favorite moment in this game so far is I once shot a hole through one guy and then shot an arrow through him and hit another guy.
Yep. Yep, you can do that as well.
It is insane.
My favorite is actually launching somebody in the air and slicing the pieces. And it's like a bloody rain falling on you.
Yeah.
It's a bit gross, but it's also super
I know. Cool. It's awesome. It's beyond brilliant. Now, I'm being told that this is going to have some online play like throughout the entire campaign.
Yeah, we are working on a co-op for the game. There won't be any multiplayer, you know, like a competitive multiplayer.
Yeah.
We don't want to go that way, but we definitely want up to four people to play together. Everybody will play as Loang, but they will see other players as, we call them co-op ninjas right now, so but basically different models for different players. But when you get into your character, you always play, you will always play as Loang.
Yeah, so now let's tell our listeners a little bit of the story of the game, because there's this character who has the spirit of another character entering the brain.
It's a bit reminiscent of the last game. So we had Hoji, yes, Shadow Warrior. Right now we have Kamiko. She's as annoying, I would say, as Hoji was. I can't tell anything more because, I would spoil too much. But right. The whole premise for the game is it happens roughly five years after the first one. So Loang, excuse my French, but fucked up. And basically the words intertwined, they connected. So right now the Shadow Realm is mixed with our world. Loang is kind of a mercenary. He's taking odd jobs for Yakuza, for different characters, for demons as well. And he's basically during one of those missions, he gets into the whole, you know, setup that you will experience in the game.
Yeah. So far, it looks really great. I'm very excited about this sequel. Do we have an expected release date yet for it?
We want to release this game this year. So Q4, we are not saying anything about the exact date yet.
All right, awesome. Todd, thank you so much for joining me here on 101. And don't worry about cursing. We're an uncensored podcast show. So fuck it all, okay?
You should have told me that before. For fuck's sake. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to have you on my show.
Like an edge of a samurai sword, the mental blade cut through flesh and bone. Double mind at peace, the world out of order, missing then the heat, blood gets colder. Oh yes, I have to find my path. No less walk on earth, water and fire. The elements compose the magnum, opens my modus operandi as amalgam. Steel packed tight in microchip of my armor, a sign of hope.
because I'm joined by one of my favorite people here down on PAX East at the HyperX booth. I'm here with David. Welcome to 101 once again. Thank you for joining me here.
Hey, thanks, Evan. Great to see you, buddy.
It's always good to see you.
Yeah.
So tell me, how has HyperX evolved in the last year since we last saw you?
Man, more and more headsets coming out. So, you know, we're going to launch our new HyperX Cloud Revolver. It's available for pre-sale right now, and it ships on May 9. So this is kind of the new headset from us. The price point is $120, a little bit more than Cloud, but I think once people try it on and listen to it, I think it's going to be worth it.
Now, I did see that you have, like, a new mic design for this Cloud. Like, how has it evolved since, like, the previous ones with the Cloud 1 and Cloud 2?
Yeah, we put a lot of work into the headset overall, but obviously we put a lot of work into the drivers, making it sound really good. On the headset side, also put a lot of work into that because we know that we want to make this the sound. We want somebody's voice to be crystal clear. And so what we did on the for the microphones is that, you know, we made sure that not only did it pass all the tests that we have in-house at HyperX, we ran it by some of the more experts in the industry, which is things like Discord and TeamSpeak. We're actually the first headset maker to get to be certified by Discord for HyperX Cloud Revolver. It's a big deal for us.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And not only do you have that, but you've also started working with Microsoft on a special edition of the Cloud specifically for the Xbox One.
Yeah, so HyperX Cloud X is what it's called. It's coming in June, probably announce it during the week of E3. And what that headset is, we base that off of our original Cloud headset, HyperX Cloud headset design. So same great comfort, 53 millimeter drivers, memory foam on the headband and the earphone and the ear cups for max comfort. But the cool thing about this is that it's got a 3.5 millimeter plug. It's going to plug right into the Xbox One controller, especially like if you have that Elite controller, you're really going to love it because the color matches, black and silver, just like the controller. And on the headset itself, there's an inline volume, which is, you don't see that a lot on console-based headsets. So what we started out originally with HyperX Cloud, Cloud 2, HyperX Cloud Revolver for PC gaming, HyperX Cloud X is now console gaming.
So I know, like, in the past, all the other clouds have been, you know, universal different sort of consoles, but with the Xbox One specific one, what sort of advantage did you guys have with working specifically with Microsoft on this headset?
Sure. I there's not that many companies that make headsets that are, you know, that are licensed for Xbox. So for us, it's a great partnership to team up with, you know, arguably the biggest software company in the world, that makes the OS that the world is standardized on for the most part. So for us, that's a big step. You know, we've only been in the headset game for a couple of years, and for us to be working with a great partner like Microsoft, that's really big.
Now, you just mentioned it a couple of years, but you guys have been doing a lot of great things. You've become like the headset for many different sort of esport competitions. Can you jump in a little bit about that?
Sure. So this year we became the official headset sponsor for ESL One, and you know the next ESL One tournament coming up in Cologne, Germany later this year is also a Valve major. So it's really cool for us to be a headset sponsor like that. You know, we're also a headset sponsor at DreamHack. Over in Europe, those are big gains for us in us as we try and forge our way as a headset maker.
Okay, so this one's going to be a little bit of a tough question.
Okay.
All right, because someone asked me about this last year. So I have a friend of a friend who uses a hearing aid, and his issue with using headsets is because of like the feedback of the hearing aid, it's really difficult for him to get good sound. This is like something that I know that a lot of other headset, not just you, but everybody has difficulty working with. Has HyperX started working on like a headset specifically for those that have like hearing aids or are hard of hearing?
You know, quite honestly, we haven't started working on that yet. We have some great headsets coming down the line on the roadmap, but for hearing impaired, not quite there yet. That's the honest answer.
You know what? I do really appreciate the honesty, but maybe somewhere down the line the technology will change and hopefully we can figure something out for those that are hard of hearing.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, that's something that's very difficult and you know, we understand that. I think for us to make a headset for hearing impaired, that takes a lot of engineering work. It took a lot of work to bring HyperX Cloud Revolver to market. We started working on Revolver, for instance. We started working on HyperX Cloud Revolver pretty much when the first Cloud launched.
Oh, wow.
And that's about 2 years, you know. So that's kind of the I'm not saying that all headsets take 2 years, but it took, you know, between 1 to 2 years for us to bring this product to market. When we get into the hearing impaired, what that's going to take for us is that's a big learning curve on our side. And it's a challenge that we'll gladly accept, and hopefully we're going to be able to conquer and make a solution for that.
Well, dude, I have total faith that you guys will figure something out pretty soon. I am really stoked by what you guys are showing off here at HyperX. I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys are planning in the near future. And what I love about you guys, you are top quality, but very affordable prices in the HyperX line.
Well, thank you very much. That's what we're trying to do. You know, all of the headsets that we made up to this point, somewhere $50 to $100. We do want to provide genuine quality with some really cool benefits. You know, like all the good stuff that came with Cloud and Cloud 2, the extra adapter, the extension cables, the case for it too. You know, for Cloud X, actually, this is one thing I didn't mention. Cloud X for Xbox One comes with a hard shell case. And it's a really slick case. You're going to really like that. And,
nice.
And, you know, that headset's $99.99. Not that much money.
No, it's not compared to other, you know, headsets that I won't name here right now. But, yes, that sounds fantastic. But David, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. Please, listeners, be sure to check out HyperX. Where's the best place you can find out more information on HyperX?
Simply at HyperXGaming.com.
Dude, thank you once again.
Thanks, Evan. Great to see you, buddy.
Just 4 days, but it's out of my hands. When I wake up, I'm not catching my breath. And when I close my eyes, I can lost in your face. I'm gonna fall so high, no, I don't give a damn.
Once again, I'm at the Yeezbrit Games booth. I'm here with Andrew Alexson from Axe Studios, showing off Y2K, a postmodern RPG. Welcome to One-on-One. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. First of all, I've been coming to your booth playing Y2K these last couple of years, and I am always impressed by how much the game has evolved in these last 2 years.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we've been working really hard on it, really pushing the game, trying to make it something special, taking our time, really trying to make something that, while of course Earthbound influenced, is something that hasn't been done yet.
Right. And I like the elements of the game that where you combine music with RPG, and even the whole interactivity of the whole thing. When you're playing as one of the main characters, he has like the turntable. You have to actually kind of like do a bit of a quick scratch, as you will, to get the combos going.
Yeah, when we first started the battle mode, I don't know if you played it at this point, but there was no mini games in the battle. It was just purely menu driven. You hit attack, and then the character attacked. You hit skills, the character did the skills. So what we found was we wanted to make something that people would get more reward from playing it. And I think you noticed when you played it yourself that there's a challenge even in just executing a basic attack. So once you've finished it, there's a sense of accomplishment. So we really wanted each move to actually be skill-based, that the player could get better at it, so that we could hide secrets inside of each ability, like being able to tap multiple times on the record to do more damage. And we don't ever actually tell the player that. We actually keep it as a secret.
It's kind of like this whole aspect of, all right, so with an RPG like Final Fantasy or Chrono Trigger, you already have like these superhuman sort of characters. But I feel like with this, with it being Y2K, you have regular Joes trying to do superhuman things, and I feel like that helps add on to the challenge of doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's something fun about taking people from a very mundane atmosphere and putting them into something very, very extraordinary. And it's a challenge to find weapons for normal people. Like, if you were to fight, what do you think your weapon would be? Like, what would you fight with?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I would maybe fight with one of my microphones that I record my podcast with.
Right, yeah, you could swing it around. It could become like the ball and chain weapon, whatever that's called. I guess myself, we thought about this because we almost put ourselves as bosses in the games, but like that's really narcissistic. We're not gonna go that deep into it. And we had a bunch of different things that we thought about doing, and then ultimately, I think I'd fight with my car. I'd get in my car. Probably be the best, you know, weapon for me.
Running over the boss. That's not a bad idea.
Exactly, yeah.
So tell our listeners a little bit of the story of Y2K. Like, what's going on in this mundane sort of world that's not becoming so mundane anymore?
So on April 4th, 1999, Sammy Park is a young woman, and she goes missing. She's a 22-year-old woman who begins work at the Korean News Network as an intern. She goes to work, and around 2:30 in the afternoon, she takes her lunch break. And then she vanishes. No one reports her missing for a few days, but within the span of 2:30 of her going missing, and when she's reported 4 days later, there's a video uploaded online of her inside of an elevator. The elevator doors open up, and there's a creature made of stars, and she becomes terrorized by the creature and the elevator, and she's pulled from it. That video is uploaded to onism1999.com, which is a conspiracy theory message board. And the main character sees the events from the video, and he starts to become really invested in trying to find out the origins of the video, trying to find where Sammy Park has gone. The interesting thing is, within the first hour of the game, you actually met Sammy, and you were actually on the elevator with her. So you have an actual connection that you met her. And then something happens, and you're separated. So you met the missing girl, but at the same time, you don't really know her too well. So that's the general setup.
With it being the game taking place in 1999, like, what are some of the challenges of making sure that everything that you talk about in this game has already existed by that timeline?
Well, actually, I think in a way it was kind of a crutch, because you can do a lot more with the story if someone can't just call someone and be like, oh, hey, don't go here, you're going to die if you do it. Because people didn't have cell phones, you had to make sure someone was at the house. We actually used the fact that the main form of communication in the 90s was like a landline connection. That plays into the story. So there's a large portion of the game that revolves around getting phone calls and having to be in your house when they're happening. So we kind of took delight in the fact that we could use the primitive technology as a way to sort of force the characters to be in certain circumstances.
Nice. So I know it's been 2 years since I've been watching you guys create this game. How much left is there for development?
So the PC version of the game is done. We are not releasing the game until the Wii U and PS4 version are complete. So we have a lot of people who are very much anticipating on the Wii U, and a lot of people are anticipating on the PS4. So we've sort of resigned ourselves to make sure that the console version is done day one. So the game is fully playable on PlayStation 4 and Wii U. So we are expecting to have the game out this summer. So I would say probably towards the end of the summer it'll be out. It'll be out before Final Fantasy 15, no matter what, because we'll be crushed if we release it the same month.
That's a good idea. Always make sure that you release before the giant one comes out. But Andrew, let me tell you, like, Y2K, from what I've been playing of these last couple years, it looks fantastic. And honestly, I can't wait to dive into the full game when it's fully released. Y2K, a postmodern RPG coming this summer to PS4, Wii U, and PC.
And Vita as well.
Oh, and Vita as well, yes. Andrew, thank you for joining me here on 1&1, and best of luck on the rest of PAX East.
Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to 1&1, one of my absolute favorite video game guys on the planet, Mr. Goichi Suda, creator of Let It Die.
Let me die.
I'm Stuffy T1. Welcome, PAX East.
So tell us a little bit about Let It Die. How did this idea come to fruition?
まあ、ハードコアでクレイジーなゲームをまた作りたいなと思って作りました。But
it's long story short, I wanted to make a hardcore and crazy game.
Yeah. So what is the premise of Let It Die? It looks like you just literally did die, and now you're coming back, and you are now trying to survive in this sort of underworld. Is that correct?
まあ、この世界は2027年のサウス東京なんですね。東京湾に海の中に突然とできた南東京の塔があって、タワーがあって、その中をプレイヤーは下から上を目指してプレイをする。
まあ、そんな世界に入ります。
You're going to be in this world that it takes place in the year 2027 at the south part of Tokyo where this tower rises out of the ocean and players are now put in there and trying to reach the top and you'll find out a bit more.
All right, just one final question. Why should players play Let It Die?
ああ、それは、なんだろうな。あの、プレイステーション4を持ってるプレイヤーにとっては当然のことなんですね。
Well, if you have a PlayStation 4, then there is no other reason not to play this game.
Yeah. この世界を楽しみ、この世界で生き抜くこと、それがPlayStation 4 ユーザーの務めです。
So it is a duty as a PlayStation 4 user to come into this world and find out what everything is about and see what you can achieve.
Yeah. Ah, sorry. ダウンロード開始は今年、待っててください。
So please find out more about what's going on later this year. But yes, we're coming.
Suda Sensei, arigato gozaimasu. Let it die, coming 2016 to PS4.
Yeah, let it die.
Folks, I just had the shit scared out of me thanks to Outlast 2, and I'm here with the man responsible for it, the screenwriter, JT Petty. Welcome to One on One. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
So first of all, holy shit, that freaked me the hell out. Even though it's one of those games where you forget it's a video game.
I love hearing that. I love standing out here and listening to the screams.
So my question to you is, how difficult was it to one-up the first Outlast? Because the first Outlast was scary as hell as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's all work, but it's fun, right? I mean, like, we're just sitting around coming up with ways to scare the shit out of people, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, and we're a bunch of sick motherfuckers. Like, this is what we would be doing if nobody was paying us. So, it's nice.
So, tell us the story of Outlast 2. Like, what is the tale that brings you back to a world like this?
Sure. Well, I don't want to give away too much. I mean, I'll tell you what you get in the opening of the demo, which is
right.
Where you're an investigative reporter. You're working with your wife, and they found this pregnant woman on the side of the road way out in the middle of Arizona, right?
Yeah.
She's barefoot. She's dressed in rags. They take her to the hospital, and when she's alone in the room, she dies of strangulation. And so this is a little bit fishy. You and your wife head out into the Arizona to try to find where she came from. Helicopter crashes. You wake up. Your wife's gone. You're alone. You start wandering, and you find this town. And then shit goes south.
Dude, the part where you're at the well and you're about to look down and that giant tongue just comes right out to you. It's one of those things where you know something's going to happen when you look down there, but you just have to go for it.
Yeah, no, and we've got ideas for further polish on that too. Like actually watching, you know, this is the first time anybody outside of the team has played this at all. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a lot of ideas for how to like polish stuff up and all that, but I love that works.
So what has the feedback been so far for Outlast 2?
It's been screams and cries, you know. Like,
do you have a favorite reaction you've had from someone so far?
Yeah. I mean, my personal favorite. You know, we peek in every once in a while. There's the school scare. A guy dropped everything and tried to hide under the desk that he was playing on, which I liked.
Wow.
Heard a lot of comments about the crunchy babies. People don't like the crunchy babies. And just hearing people in there to be like, oh, they crunch, no, you know, like that's enjoyable.
Well, no, if you're making them cringe, you're doing something right, man.
Yeah, exactly.
So, how far into production is Outlast 2? Because I know you announced it last year, and this is like the first we're actually seeing some gameplay footage of it.
Sure. Yeah, we're more than halfway there. We're still aiming at a fall launch.
Very cool. So, is it going? Because I know when it first came out, it was just PC exclusive. Is this going to be something that's going to be launching alongside with console, or is it going to be PC first, like the previous one?
PC and console both.
Excellent. So, my final question is, for those who were frightened of the first Outlast, why should they give a second chance for Outlast 2?
I mean, so, if they still have enough of a life to have a little bit of money and a credit card, we didn't fuck them up enough, right? Like if they're not permanently fucked up for life, they need to come back and give it another chance to actually just have their face melted.
JT, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. Outlast, hopefully coming out this fall on PC and consoles. Prepare to have the shit scared out of you in many, many different ways, shapes, and forms. And also, get yourself a pair of, what do they call it, disposable underwear. Stocks are going to go up for those, by the way.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll have some branded Outlast underwear eventually.
Coming down on me. I saw